Welcome to the podcast. I'm Angela Beaubier, and this is Life in the Talbot Settlement, brought to you by Tyrconnell Heritage Society, operators of Backus Page House Museum. In this series, we will do our best to give you a full appreciation of the history of Western Elgin County in southwestern Ontario, from First Nations to the early settlers to the 1950s. Sit back, relax, and enjoy. Before we begin, I'd like to acknowledge funding from Tyrconnell Heritage Society, operators of Backus Page House Museum. Before we get into this episode, I'd like to give a warning that we discuss details of certain medical practices that probably aren't suitable for those who get squeamish because we're going to use some graphic details. Also, we are not doctors, nor do we have any medical degrees, so please do not try any of these cures at home. If this episode doesn't seem to your liking, I advise you click off and join us in 2 weeks. For a settler, any illness, no matter the severity, could quickly become deadly. Settlers turn to their own remedies for a cure. Leeches, hot pokers, cobwebs, cow dung. Let's investigate some of the early healthcare practices and popular medicinal remedies of the 1800s. We often take our health for granted. When we get sick, we have readily available medicines and doctors who cure our illnesses. We are extremely fortunate for the scientific advancements and research giving us the knowledge of how we contract sicknesses and diseases. Back in the day, settlers did not know of the microscopic bacteria called germs, or how it rapidly caused disease. Today, we realize that illnesses are spread by one person catching germs from another. So we refrain from sharing cups, going near others when we're sick, and we practice self-care. Early settlers did things very differently. It was widely believed that bathing often removed protective oils from your skin, and without those oils, a person was subjected to disease. There were many common practices that aided in the spread of illness, such as after washing the floor or doing laundry, the dirty water was usually thrown outside the door. This dirty water could seep into the well and contaminate your clean drinking water. Settlers did not have the same cleanliness standards as we do today, mostly contributing to the fact that they simply did not know of the dangers that they were inducing. Unfortunately, the lack of research and scientific advancements 100 years ago, the pioneers were left to conjure up ideas on how illnesses spread and how they could be treated. People thought that diseases traveled through the air, the water, under the ground, and associated disease with a bad vapor called miasma. Doctors used scented sticks held up to the nose, which was supposed to stop the miasma before it entered the body. Cows, pigs, horses, and dogs are all big animals settlers suspected carried disease around. Little did they know, animals as small as rats could carry disease as well. Small animals, such as the rat, could fall into the common household well, causing the spread of disease. The cause of sickness was unknown, and doctors treated symptoms, not the cause. For example, a little boy had a high pulse. The doctor would simply give him medicine to slow the heartbeat, not cure the cause of the high pulse. Settlers had very different treatments than we do today. People who had fevers were kept under layers of blankets. We understand now that the easiest way to break a fever is by taking a cold bath. While being tucked in with mountainous blankets, settlers were told not to allow sunlight or fresh air into the room. They believed that cold, fresh air would make the person even more ill. Being bedridden from the simplest of sicknesses was a regular occurrence, though a little exercise is important in recovery. Community members would often take turns nursing the sick, reading books, praying, and lending a kind hand. In the 1800s, most doctors learned the trade of medicine through an apprenticeship. A young man who was about 15 years or older, aspiring to become a doctor, would move in with a physician and trade their labor for the education. The arrangement usually lasted about 2 to 6 years. However, some students continued to a formal medical school for an extra 2 to 4 years. Nevertheless, at the beginning of the century, most physicians were opening their practices without a degree. This was easy to get away with since medical practices were very rarely inspected. Dentists were often the town blacksmith because they had tools. While getting your horse's shoe fit, you could also get that pesky tooth that's been bothering you pulled out. Medical methods at this time could be very harmful, especially ones that were used to rid the body of disease. A man named Benjamin Rush came up with the most commonly used methods for curing diseases. Rush was a very influential professor at the Institutes of Medicine at the University of Pennsylvania. He lectured to thousands of students and physicians, and they followed his ideas. Here are some of the things that he talked about. First, that people of African-American race looked different due to a form of leprosy. Two, that tobacco caused madness and tuberculosis. Both of those sound insane. Though Rush's disease treatments were not helpful and most of his beliefs were outrageous, he was, however, ahead of his time by giving humane treatment to the mentally ill. Rush, like most doctors in the 1800s, encouraged phlebotomy, purging, puking, sweating, and blistering. A phlebotomy, better known as bloodletting, is the process of draining a patient of blood by applying leeches or cutting the flesh. Let's discuss the process of leeching. First, a patient's skin was shaved and washed. A tube containing a leech was turned on top of a vein. Milk or a drop of blood was used to encourage the bloodsucker to latch onto the spot. And once the doctor thought enough blood had been taken, salt was sprinkled over the area, forcing the leech to unlatch. The leeches would be taken off and put back into the jar for the next patient to use. In many communities, doctors, barbers, blacksmiths, and apothecaries were all places that offered this service. Barbers were often advertised bloodletting as part of their business. Did you know that the red and white striped pole outside every barbershop originally represented that the shop offered bleeding as well as a haircut? Red symbolized the blood, and white stood for the bandages. Rush recommended that the patient bleed at least 1 pint of blood a day. Medical professionals thought that by bloodletting a patient, they were relieving tension on constricted arteries and letting the poisonous bad blood drain out of the body. However, quite the opposite was happening. Bleeding only weakened the patient, causing less of a chance for recovery. Bleeding was a very popular remedy and was used as a solution for many health problems. Today we donate blood to others, which is a very safe act. A certain amount is carefully taken with sterile equipment, much different from 100 years ago when germs were unbeknownst to doctors. Reusing unclean medical instruments, sometimes on animals and humans, infections did occur. How do you think these infections were cured? If you guess more bleeding, you are correct. The process was repeated. Wiped clean of visible dirt, the same dirty tools were used time and time again for bloodletting. Next, we're going to talk about blistering. In the old days, it was believed that the human body could hold only one illness at a time. Blistering was usually done by acid being applied to the skin. This caused the skin to burn and form a blister. Hot pokers were another way that you could cause blistering to the body. The thought behind this obscure cure was that if someone was ill, the blister would force the other illness from the body. The patient would be magically cured, and the only thing they would have to deal with now was the blister. If you've been sick or hurt, you've probably been pinched by parents, grandparents, or siblings. This is still used today to take kids' minds off of their injuries, though it is seen more as a joke. Some illnesses blistering was used for include fever, arthritis, and more serious diseases such as cholera. Settlers believed this cure to be successful. However, it did not cure diseases. It simply forced the person to concentrate on the new pain. On top of dealing with the new painful blister, the original illness would still be present in the body and left to get worse. Dr. Rush also encouraged patients to take emetics, solutions that would induce vomiting, because he thought this was another way to get rid of the disease. Another practice he believed in was the use of laxatives to expel poisons, and this was called purging. None of these methods actually worked. Most of the time, they weakened the patient. It is no wonder that during this time, very few people trusted doctors and usually tried their own methods. Back then, there were no anesthetics to aid in surgery. The only operation doctors dared to try while their patient was awake was an amputation. Patients were given alcohol to drink before an operation to ease their mind and relax them for the surgery, though alcohol only partially blocked out some of the pain. Limbs were removed with hand saws, which were not sterilized. Afterwards, when the job was done, the veins and arteries were cauterized, often using hot tar to seal the wound and stop the bleeding. Settlers turned to local herbs to cure their ailments. How did they learn what plants to use and for what sicknesses? They sought help from our First Nations, who lived in their areas. Instead of risking using potentially poisonous herbs, they had help from the indigenous people, who'd been using herbs for centuries. Settlers learned how to treat many disorders of the intestines and stomach, for example, dysentery, intestinal worms. they acquired the knowledge of using the inside of willow bark as an aspirin. By chewing the inside of the bark, their pain was less severe. Some of the natural remedies discovered by the First Nations peoples are still used today. Willow bark can still be found as an ingredient in aspirin, and elm trees are still used as a relief for an upset stomach. Early settlers began to realize that the First Nations peoples were particularly successful in first aid, treating snake bites, fractures, and wounds. The first settlers would pass on their knowledge to future people who arrived in the settlement. Now let's talk about some of the remedies that are based on superstitions. Whooping cough was cured by the father of the family placing the head of the sick child into a hole in a meadow. This was to be done for a few minutes at dusk. No other family member could be present, or else the child would remain sick. Can you imagine a parent doing this today? Somebody would call Children's Services. What about tuberculosis? It's suggested that you smoke dried cow dung through your pipe. Okay. If you have a sore throat or a cough, simmer salted pork in hot vinegar and let it cool. The pork is to be fastened around the neck of the patient with a red piece of flannel. If pork isn't available, a dirty sock could be tied around the patient's neck. Fun. If a baby was teething, there were many ways to ease the pain. Simply by hanging the foot of a mole around the baby's neck. Or apply leeches behind the infant's ears. And finally, cutting the gums with a lancet, allowing the teeth to come through easily. Patients sometimes got better when following these old wives' tales. However, this was simply the placebo effect. Here at Bacchus Page House Museum, we have a medicine bottle with most of its label and its contents still there. The bottle claims to be antiseptic snake oil, used to reduce the possibility of infection. If you get the chance, come out and join us for a tour through the historic 1850s house and the outbuildings, including a tour through our agricultural center featuring various antique farm equipment and tools. You'll find the antiseptic snake oil bottle in our pantry. After learning a bit about health and medicine from the 1800s, aren't you glad that we've come so far? The life of a settler was extremely hard. Close to everything was done manually. Women, children, and men all worked tirelessly to survive. Sickness spread easily, and cures were not reasonably effective. One thing I hope you take out of this episode is how grateful we should be for the advancements in scientific and medical research. Again, please do not try any of these remedies or cures on yourself or others. We do not recommend or endorse any of the options mentioned in today's podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode of Life in the Talbot Settlement. Please share the podcast with your friends and follow us on all social media platforms at Bacchus Page House. The Bacchus Page House Museum and Turkana Heritage Society acknowledges the land we are on today as the traditional territory of First Nations people. As settlers at a settler-focused museum, we value both the significant historical and contemporary contributions of all original peoples and ask how we can be supportive in Indigenous cultural renewal. Life in the Talbot Settlement is a production of Turkana Heritage Society, operators of Bacchus Page House Museum. Your host has been Angela Bobier, music provided by Jack Whitmer, and thanks to our producer, Caitlin Rietzma. To make a charitable donation, become a Turkana Heritage Society member, and to contact the Bacchus Page House Museum, please visit our website, www.bacchuspagehouse.ca. Thank you again for listening.